12-Sided Stories is for mature audiences and often deals with topics that may be difficult for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
In the city of dreams, everyone wants to be a star, but at what cost? 12-Sided Stories presents Otherworld Hollywood.
My name is Wes Otis. Thank you for joining us for Otherworld Hollywood, episode number 6. This is our Call of Cthulhu actual play. I have some wonderful players. Let's start with Michelle.
Hey, I'm Michelle, and I am playing Belle Bellington, local gossip columnist and hated by everyone.
Hello, everyone. My name is Candace, also known as Candace Magnificent. My pronouns are they, she, and I am playing Ebony Belafonte, she, her.
Hello. I am Sam Starr. I use she, they, and the occasional fae pronouns. And today I am playing Imani DuVoe, up-and-coming starlet, with some new stuff, too, who uses she, her.
Hey, y'all, I am Mac, and I'm playing Lenore Von Mori, also known as Cass Richardson, and hoping to maybe get some revenge on Belle Bellington at some point. The future's looking bright.
Hello, I'm Lev. I use they, them pronouns. Today I'm playing Roberta Robbie Cerillos, a young writer who's been a little traumatized lately, uses they, she pronouns.
Well, you've got skin in the game. Okay, so.
Literally.
Enjoying the show? Then take a moment to join our Patreon. Support the podcast and get early access to episodes and bonus content. Head to 12-Sided Stories Patreon today.
So this is a great place for a recap. Last time we got together, Robbie had to rush back to their apartment and found that it had been flooded with seawater. Then going into their bathroom after the door creaked open, they found themselves on an island, a small patch of dirt that was like 200 yards wide with a large steel post in the center and a bunch of people impaled on it, much like a beef skewer. And a creature doing a ritual. And the creature turned around and it looked like it was melting. You could see its bones and its skull and all of the muscle and everything else had disappeared. So it was just skin and it started to make its way across. And that's when Penelope shook Robbie awake and said, "Hey, you're going through a lot. While they're cleaning this up, you come over to my place." Meanwhile, back at the set, Tony Stinelli showed up, the owner, investor in Cutham Films, and he was very excited about the national syndication of Lenore's show, but then he saw Belle, his ex-wife, and the person that he has to sign $500 alimony checks every month to. So he was totally unnerved, and he didn't really talk to anyone. Later on, Danny informed him that Lenore was going to get married. He's worried about this hurting her career and hurting the show and Cutham's future and her future, and said that he would look into seeing if they could push the time down a ways, if possible, and maybe deal with Belle. That evening, Lenore went around her set, put her hand on a chest. She looked down, she had blood on her hand. She opened the chest. There was a skinless person in there who told her everyone was gonna find out. And then she woke up and found out that she had imagined it all because a prop guy came over, opened it up, it was fine. And then she went on about recording. Meanwhile, Evie has been checking her skin a lot, making sure that this new cream hasn't done anything weird, you know, because the proof, it's been day one. Who knows how long this will last, but so far it's been working really well. Finally, Imani showed up for her first night of basically after dark BDSM pictures. Think Betty Page, 1950s. They're highly illegal. So she's going to be wearing a mask, like a Mardi Gras mask and stuff a lot of the time. But they're going to do different shoots and stuff. And then they sell those. And that's how Cutham Films gets all of their money. or a lot of their money, is through these photo shoots. During the photo shoot, she gets a call from Rose, her live-in girlfriend slash murderer, very, very upset that she's not home yet. But Imani said, hey, look, don't mess my game up. I don't care. I will be home when I'm home. And then hung up. And so we'll get to that in a little bit. The very last thing is Robbie makes it to Penelope's house, learns that Penelope is from like mega money, meets her butler and her cat Easter. And that's where we ended it last time. So starting out, we're going to start over that evening with Evie. You're home. It's been a long day. What's the ritual at night?
And that depends on whether or not there's a suitor. I imagine tonight there is not.
That's up to you.
Yeah, like, I think that it was a long, busy day at work, and I think they're probably anxious about how this is going to continue to work. They feel suspiciously good. While she's a person who's become entitled to feeling good, she's too seasoned to not expect some kind of price to be exacted for how good she feels. So I think she goes home. She probably treats herself to dinner so she doesn't have to deal with the dishes and the cooking. And I think she cuddles up with Buttercup and listens to like a radio play and runs a bath and kind of tries to do like this nightly kind of calm down ritual of just kind of getting the day off of her and trying to get into sleep mode so that she can get her 10 hours.
All right. So you run this bath and you do your whole thing and you step into the bath and suddenly you find yourself in a speakeasy and you're dressed up to the nines and there are all of these men surrounding you and a couple of women talking to you like jazz is blaring in the background and you're a bit disoriented. Evie, are you okay?
Yes. Excuse me, I think this dancing and all this boozing has gone to my head. Yes, I'm quite fine, thank you.
Well, so, when did you get into town? You're new here, obviously.
It's been a whirlwind, really. I've much to learn, but...
And I think she touches her face and pulls out a compact to, like, see what she looks like at that moment.
What would 1926 Evie look like?
She's much younger. Features are not nearly as striking. Cheekbones are a little softer, cheeks rounder. Her hair is not nearly as fashionable as it is now. She's wearing a plain dress that is a very beautiful red color, but very simply cut. And she is probably struggling to hide runs in her stockings.
Right then, you feel a tap on your shoulder. And there's a man standing there, not much older than you, but older than you. And he goes, you are by far the best looking woman in this entire place. You know that, right?
Thank you. I'm not accustomed to such compliments where I come from, honestly. Down the shore, it's complicated.
Well, you should get used to those. You're from down the shore?
That's what we call it. Yes, Neptune, New Jersey.
Ah, well... Welcome to Hollywood, kid. You're definitely striking.
Thank you.
She can like feel the blood kind of rush to her cheeks as she blushes deeply.
He puts his hand out and my name's Tony Stanelli. It's nice to meet you.
Oh, Mr. Stanelli, it's lovely to meet you.
Can I buy you a drink?
Yes, nothing too strong, please. I've already had a little indulgence tonight, apparently,
and holds her head.
Ah, we'll get you something easy. He starts to guide you towards the bar. But in the background, under all this jazz music, you start hearing this constant chirping bark, and you can't really make it out. And then suddenly it becomes louder and louder. And as you get to the bar, you wake up in the tub, and the water is overflowing onto the floor. Buttercup is freaking out, barking as much as they can. And you suddenly are awake.
Go, Buttercup! What? How could you let this happen?
And she reaches over and turns the faucet off.
Okay.
Is it the hot water?
Yeah.
So is the tub, like, boiling?
It's not boiling. It's just really warm.
Okay.
You had both going, so it's pretty warm, but you just laid back and you figured you'd turn it off in a minute, and then suddenly you were in a speakeasy.
She kind of tries to shake it off. She finds herself somewhere between nostalgic and a little horrified, being back there trying to figure out how to speak as beautifully as the other actors and actresses, finding her new kind of non-baby city accent and trying to, you know, remember to keep her back straight and her shoulders squared and all of that. That seems miles away from where she is now. And to be back there was both exciting and a lovely memory, but also deeply troubling and a little sad to, like, see that innocence again.
Okay. So you take your bath and you dry off the floor and everything else, and you catch in the mirror what you think looks like several strands of white hair.
In her head? Oh, there is a screech. There's a screech and a clattering as, like, half the bottles on this vanity go flying. And she just rams her face as close to the mirror as possible without smashing it.
Your face is super red from the heat of the tub. And you realize you probably were knocked out for, like, maybe 10 minutes. And you see that there are new lines that weren't there, just like 3 or 4 lines underneath your eyes, and then just one line around your mouth that wasn't there the day before. And you have a small poof of white hair now up on the very top of your head. Can I get a resolve check?
Yeah, she is just silently crying, looking at the mirror. Oh, that's bad.
Okay, so I want to point out that if this is the first missed one, we've gone through skin people, skinless people, horrible things, but the white hair, that's going to push us over the edge. Yes.
This makes sense.
That's a 70 over 55.
Oh, okay. So we roll. All right, you lose 3 points. So you are shocked, but you're not going to have any, like, huge response unless you want to.
She has, like, a grip on the edge of this vanity as she's staring at herself. And when she's finally able to let go, trying to release the cramping in her hand, she strokes the white hairs and touches her face and immediately looks for the cream and, like, holds it up, just sees if there's anything else. Is there any information on the bottle? Could this be a reaction? Just kind of mumbling to herself, that bitch, she knew. She had to know.
So you look at the bottle, and it's just a basic logo on the front. And then on the back, there is an address in Beverly Hills as the business address. It doesn't even have what's in it. It just says, look your best, look renewed.
She grips the bottle tighter, takes a breath, realizes it's late, and uses a different skin cream, like her most expensive one. I think when she opens the jar, there's, like, the dregs in there. She's, like, using some from, like, the lid and, like, the edges of the bottle. She just slathers her face in it. She keeps, like, washcloths and stuff in her refrigerator. She grabs one of those, puts it on her face, and puts her eye mask over that, and then lays down and sets an alarm for 2 hours earlier than she would normally need to be up so that she can go to this place and rip somebody a new asshole.
Okay. All right. Sam, your first night shooting goes really well and probably a lot of fun. You pack up all your stuff. Vivian is very impressed, and then she hands you $300. Says, there you go.
Sticks it in my bra.
We're going to do this again in like a week. If you're interested still, come on by.
Of course. Thank you for the opportunity. I really, truly appreciate it. See y'all next week.
Oh, one other thing I didn't tell you. You got a bunch of calls after that first call, but you were in shooting, so we just kind of told, she said she was your sister, that you weren't available.
Yeah. My sister sometimes is hard of hearing or hard of listening, depending on however you want to put it.
I mean, yeah, I understand that. Well, we'll talk soon, okay?
Absolutely. And Amani, I think, turns around, and the look on her face is like that undercurrent simmering of anger. Just like, what the fucking Rose. And I'll head back.
So when you get to your apartment, you notice that there's a squad car out front. Its lights on. You see Trish on the sidewalk talking to one of the officers.
I could just turn around right now and I'm not even home. I wouldn't even know. I could just turn. I'm going to regret this. And I walk up over to Trish and the officer. What's going on?
Oh, hi, Amani. This is Officer Wilkes. He's taking a statement. Rose had an episode. She kept yelling and throwing things in the apartment, and I got scared, and I had to call somebody. I'm sorry, but they just took her away.
So instead of the hospital, you called the police?
She threw a chair at me and then attacked me. I didn't know what to do.
All right. They took her downtown, I'm assuming?
Yeah.
Well, all right. And I think Amani is just all over the place at this point in time now. She's really not wanting to go down to the police. This can be a lot bigger of a problem than it needs to be. So I just make my way on down to the station, I guess.
Okay. So you get down there and the officer behind the desk says that Trish isn't pressing charges, but they felt that they needed to let Rose calm down a bit. And they ask you, they're like, do you want us to release her to you now?
Yes, I've known Rose for quite some time. I think if there's anybody who's able to talk her down, it's me. I'll take good care of her. You won't have any more issues with her, officer. I do truly apologize for any inconvenience this may have caused you.
No problems. We'll get her for you. She comes out and you notice two detectives standing not far away, just checking you both out. And Rose comes up and goes, I'm so sorry. I'm really sorry. I'm so sorry.
Shh. Not now. We will talk about this when we get home.
Okay.
Smile.
All right. Smiles.
Thank you, officers. Y'all have a great rest of your day. Kind of like pulls her arm along with me.
She follows behind. You guys get back to the apartment, and the apartment is trashed.
You cannot be fucking serious, Rose.
You hung up on me, and I got angry, and then I called back, and they wouldn't let me talk to you, and I got angry.
What part of I'm at work do you not understand? I am not available to you 24/7. I have a job, unlike some people here. And what I don't do is trash a place. Rose, I am doing you a solid by letting you stay here with me.
I know you are. I know you are.
You can't just be in the police station. You can't have these types of episodes unless you want other things to come. What happens if they search the house? What happens if they ran your name and your prints?
She called them, not me. She called them.
And for what reason? Because you were upset that I didn't answer a phone call after I explicitly told you I am working and I will talk to you when I get home. I'm sorry, did I say that in another language?
No, you didn't. It won't happen again. I promise, baby. I promise.
It shouldn't have happened the first time. Here. And I think she takes the $300 out of her shirt and places it on the table in between the two of them.
What do you want me to do with this?
This is what I need you to act right for. The thing that keeps you and me fed and out of police custody. Do I make myself clear? We will not have this problem again.
Yeah. How did you get so much money?
It's called a job. I suggest you get one. And she will turn on her heel and go, in the shower to get ready for bed.
All right. So that's where we're going to stop that scene. Lenore, you finish recording. And like I said, you noticed Amani going in for the late night stuff, and you've heard rumors and whatever and talk. And you meet up with Henri at the shack. It's a dive bar that also is a front for a gay bar so that people can go there and kind of talk and not worry about raids or any of that kind of crap. And you're back in the back room with Henri, and he's like, you look really tired. Are you okay?
It's been a day in so many ways. We're working on this new movie, and then they want to take my show national.
Oh, that's amazing. I knew you were too big for that place.
Unfortunately, I also found out a little bit about how my worth is assessed as a performer, and they're concerned about the marriage, and I might have an ace in the hole where Bella's concerned, but it's going to be a long play.
What did they say your worth was?
My worth is in how I look, and how I look to people that think that I might be available on some level to them, despite the fact that that's really barking up the wrong tree.
Boy, howdy. Yeah, I would love to say that I haven't run into that, but I have. The way you look is the jobs that you're going to get, you know? Of course, at the same time, character actors have a job forever.
Which was the category that I feel I really belong to, but maybe that's not the case. Maybe I was fooling myself.
Well, I mean, you're a knockout in a black dress. You're not really, like, a character actor.
But people know me for doing bit character parts in other things as well. I'm a working actor. I'm not just Lenore Von Mori, TV show host.
Typecasting is a pitfall, I know. Maybe we should start looking around for a part outside of Lenore that you could maybe get into before Lenore goes, you know.
Before I hit my 30s?
Yeah, that too. But before your show goes national. I know that takes a little time to set up, but we could look into doing, you know, some auditions. Find out if maybe there's something out there that you could sink your teeth into. Okay, no, that was the wrong metaphor.
Yeah, I do that on a nightly basis. I mean, I walk down the street and people wonder how I'm out in the daylight without bursting into flames. I like what I do, Henri. I really do.
Yeah, but I'm saying if you don't want to be typecast as just Lenore, maybe another... I'm not saying to not do Lenore. I'm saying something adjacent that's not horror. You could do something else in the daylight where people see you in a different light.
I don't know if I can do that. I don't. Who's going to hire me?
I think you're way harder on yourself than you think.
I think you're unrealistic. But I always have, in a way. That's part of why I adore you.
I think you have to be a little unrealistic to make it in this business, though. You have to just believe that it's going to work out. It's silly, I know, but I believe that you can do it. You know?
Well, if something comes up on your radar, I mean, you're the one with the clout.
Yeah, and I will totally start looking into it.
You can tell them, you know, I'm looking for something for my fiancé, and that may get some people interested. Speaking of which, we will have to do something soon to make sure that Belle holds up her end of the bargain.
Well, I went out and got you this, and he pulls out a ring, and it's this really nice rock. And he says, I don't know what the tradition is, to be honest with you, but I figured I should get us a ring.
It's beautiful, and you're wonderful, and I'm so sorry that this is happening to us.
I think that no matter what, even if we weren't friends... This is how this city works right now. And so we have to do what we have to do. And whether we were together or not, this could have happened. I was sloppy. He was cute. So I fell for the kiss and I should have been more careful. And I am sorry for you too.
Well, at least we can maybe have some fun with it and do the proposal at a cemetery and I can get my Lenore get up on and we can make it a whole big splashy ridiculous thing that we can laugh about later, hopefully.
Didn't you just get done telling me how you don't want everybody to think about you like Lenore?
Well, I want to be Lenore. I just don't want to be a piece of meat. There's a difference.
I understand that. I understand that. Well, then let's do it. There's a, you know, forest lawn or whatever. We'll figure it out. I'll talk with some people. We'll make it happen.
You deserve better than this.
I'm the reason this is happening. I don't see why you're beating yourself up so much.
It's what I do. It's always what I've done. You know that.
Look, we'll make it through. It'll be fine. You know?
I hope so.
Can't be this way forever.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but I'm glad to see that you have optimism where I have a little less.
We balance each other out.
Always have. Always will.
So your night goes on. You probably end up at home, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning or so. And that's where we're going to close that out. So, Robbie, you're at Penelope's palatial manor. And Adam is running around doing all of this stuff. And you hear Adam say, you know, if you let me hire a staff, we could do all of this much easier. And Penelope says, no way in hell are we going to have more staff. I don't need any staff. I don't even need you, but I can't fire you. And he laughs, you joke so much, and then runs off and does his thing. And you see Easter rubbing up against your leg, and Penelope comes up and goes, ah, you met Easter, or at least Easter showed up about 3 months ago on my front porch, and for some reason just looked like an Easter to me, so that's what I called him.
He's very sweet.
He is.
I want to pick him up, but also there's a fish in my arms, so that seems like
I'll take the fish. I'll take your fish.
Thank you. And so Robbie's going to scoop the cat up like a baby and like hold it with one arm and with the other arm. Okay, now that I have the cat, please tell me what that door is. That looks out of place. Why is it there?
She looks uncomfortable for a second and she goes, it's a family heirloom.
A door?
Yeah, door. It's an old door from an old castle. And I have to keep it with me because it's my inheritance, basically part of my inheritance.
Fascinating.
It goes into a little room that has nothing in it. So, because there are too many rooms in this place.
Yes. Rich people are wild. What do you do with all this space? Are you lonely? Is it scary?
Well, I'm lonely, but I don't know if that's a rich person problem or just a person problem.
No, I didn't mean that as in a rich person problem. I just meant the inheritance being a door. That's pretty wild to me.
Yeah, it's very English, I think.
Yeah.
Just pass everything down, even doors.
I mean, I have things that are passed down. And Robbie, like, juggles the cat and reaches into their pocket. And there's this, like, tiny little carved, like, dime-sized frog with little red glass beads pushed in as its eyes.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yes. I think my great-grandfather made it. I can't remember.
That's amazing. The story you're telling in that script is horrifying, but still very compelling.
Well, that's the world for you, isn't it?
That's why, kind of the reason why I didn't watch, I was worried about you seeing this, is because we definitely come from very different worlds, and I'm a little ashamed of all this.
Oh, certainly different worlds. Well, I think is, maybe you can do something good with it.
As soon as I can sell the damn thing, I will. Maybe I'll give the money away. Just be like, here, take it.
You could make it like a home for people who don't have a home.
I'm sure the city of Brentwood would love that.
Then, well, that's their problem. That's not your problem.
They'd make it my problem. It's a rich person thing, trust me.
Gross.
Yeah, it is gross. Can I show you around?
Yes, please. Do you have a map?
She says, no, there's, your room is literally off this particular, right there. It's, that's Adam's running in and out to make up the bed and everything. That's the guest room.
Okay.
The kitchen is through that door, and Adam will be here every day from 8 in the morning to about 5 in the afternoon. And anything that you need, you can ask him. And you'll probably be at work anyway.
That's true.
So just let him know if you have any clothes he needs to wash or anything else. Just let him know.
I can wash my own clothes. I've been doing that for a long time.
So do you know when we're on set and the gaffers are working on something and they need something fixed, or even better, the Teamsters, when the Teamsters are sitting there and somebody needs to go someplace and I say, hey, I can drive you. And then the Teamsters go, no, you can't. Well, it's because it's called job security. And Adam has the same thing in his mind where if you do things, then his job doesn't mean anything. And then therefore he doesn't have a job. So he would be quite offended if you didn't let him clean up and make your bed and do all of the things that he is accustomed to doing. I'll be honest with you. If he had his way, we would have 6 more people in here, maids, everything else. But I did put my foot down on that because it is ridiculous. I am one person. I do not need all this shit. Anyway, that's the best I can explain it.
Okay, so it would be kind to him to let him do things for me.
Be kind to yourself as well, because he can drive you nuts with it. So just, yeah, both ways.
Okay, I understand. Okay, I understand.
Just make sure the cat's pet, you know.
Do I need to feed the cat, or does he do that too?
You should feed the cat, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's something that is fun about taking care of a pet, is being able to feed him. Let me show you the kitchen and everything.
Thanks.
So you walk through this large entryway into the dining room, which has this long table, like 16-place table, and this ginormous china set out in the whole nine yards. Beautiful. And she's like, I've never had one meal at this table. And then you walk through into the kitchen, and it's a large kitchen, and takes you over to the pantry and shows you where the cat food is. And Easter is purring on your shoulder. And she helps you feed Easter. She then takes you into the library. And the library is full of all of these items from all over the world. And there's these pictures of these women standing together. And then there's a picture of an older man holding a big elephant rifle and has a wine glass in his hand. And she goes, and this is the library. Some of the bookcases you can see have locks on them. Don't touch any of those books, but you can touch anything else, okay?
Why can't I touch the locked books?
Do you believe in ghosts?
I think so.
Okay, so, and she picks up a picture and she says, these are my aunts, or my great aunts, and my grandmother. And they were part of a society. It was during the spiritual movement. Anyway, my aunt, and when I say aunt, I mean friend of the family, not actual aunt.
Okay.
My aunt Eugenia sent me lots of books and then told me never to read them and to keep them locked up.
That's a horrible gift.
Yeah. So that's what I did. I haven't read any of them. They're just locked up.
You didn't ask her why?
I did.
What did she say?
She said that they're full of demons and that I could be killed by them if I read them.
Interesting.
So I locked them up and kept them safe.
Why would you keep things safe that are trying to kill you?
Remember doing what you're told by your elders? That's kind of where I'm at right now with all of this. I think that it's strange that she asked me to do this, but it just kind of happened.
Interesting.
And so she shows you the picture of Ethel, Dr. Powell. She goes, this is my grandmother, Alizé. And this is Ethel. I never met her. She left. She disappeared. And Eugenia spent a lot of years trying to track her down, but never could find her.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah. We don't know what happened to her.
Maybe she got eaten by one of the books.
Maybe. I mean, they were into some major occult stuff back then, you know, so who knows? And the picture looks like it was taken around 1900, 1901 or so, like the turn of the century.
Do you have any books about what they worked on? Because I would be fascinated to learn from them.
So everything you just said goes against everything that I was told when I was growing up. But you're free to look at any of the books here. Some of them are just straight up regular occult books and spiritualist books. The ones outside of the thing. The ones behind the locks, don't open those. It's not good. Just leave them alone.
Amazing. Okay. Understand.
All right. Well, I have to get ready. I have to go in just like an hour, so.
Oh my God. I'm very sorry for your loss.
She had been sick for a little while, and her husband passed away like 6 months ago, and we were expecting it, but it's still difficult. She was a cool woman.
Well, thank you again for this very kindness. And I will do my best to make sure your home is in functional hands.
I know you will. I'm going to get ready and, hang out with Easter, do what you need to do. The TV's in the other room. Have any questions, ask Adam. He'll let you know. So she goes off and you're left alone in this huge room. With Easter at your feet.
Robbie kind of makes a circuit of the room, starting at the farthest point from the locked books and pulling out like occult books and spiritualist books and paranormal books, whatever is kind of around, and starts kind of making a stack on a side table. And then when they get to the locked books, they kind of tap on the lock just to see if it's definitely locked.
You tap on the lock and you hear Easter let out a little yowl, not a growl, but more of a yowl sound. And you notice that he starts to like do the circle eight thing between your legs real quick.
Okay. All right. Okay. I think I get the message for now. I'm going to throw Easter over one shoulder, scoop up all of my books, and like toddle back to the room that Adam has set up for me with one last look over at the bookcase and a plan forming on how I'm going to get into those books.
Well, and that's the thing. It's not just that set. There's a couple of sets throughout the house that have been locked.
Cats can be put in rooms. I don't want to break her rules right when she's upstairs.
All right. So you go and do all that. All right.
I think like the last thing Robbie does before kind of collapsing onto the bed, because it's been a day and the day has stretched over 2 days. So I think they're going to put Easter at eye level with Callisto, where Callisto's like stuck on the side of the glass, and say, all right, I want friendship between the two of you. No trying to dip your little paws in here, please, Easter. And you, no swimming in fancy circles and mocking. Okay, Callisto?
You're not sure, but maybe a peace was brokered here today.
And I'll put the cat on the end of the bed, make sure that I have Easter close on the bedside table, and lay down and pick up one of the books.
Okay. Let us jump over to Evie waking up in the morning 2 hours early. You look at your face, and the lotion that you put on last night after the incident seems to have done nothing. And your face still looks like it does with the extra lines.
Evie gets dressed swiftly, lays out a nicer kind of outfit to make herself feel a little bit better. When she finally gets everything to go, she has a cup of black coffee, a slice of toast that's plain, and half a grapefruit for breakfast. And I think when she finally gets out the door, ready to head to the location on the bottle, she wraps herself almost mummy-like from the neck up. She's wearing her dress, a trench, a shawl, and then a shawl like over top of that, but like on her head, like babushka style, and then a pair of like huge sunglasses that kind of wrap around her entire face, and then a second scarf around her mouth just so no one can see her hair or skin at all. Like you can see like the top like kind of crescent moon of her forehead peeking out from behind this get up as she gets in the car. She puts her little driving gloves on and rides out to the location that's written on this jar.
Okay. You get there and there's this huge mansion, and the guard at the gate says, how can I help you?
Yes, hello. Good morning. I would love to speak to the person who's made this little jar of loveliness. Please let me in. I have much to say, business opportunity and all that.
Oh, you have a jar of the rejuvenation lotion, you say?
I do, yes. Yesterday I had quite a fantastic go with my lovely newfound results. But I would like to speak to someone about the longevity of the product and making sure that it gets into all the right hands, so to speak.
Okay, well, I'll see if I can find somebody that can help you. Drive up to the loop.
Thank you. I think as she drives, she pauses for a moment and is just like, so, like, maybe this is just all in my head. Maybe people were just being nice to me yesterday. If it's that easy to get into this place, they're not worried about their proprietary formula being stolen by some asshole. I didn't even have to, like, stamp my feet or threaten to burn someone to the ground to get into this building.
Nope. You just said you had one of the jars. That was it.
Yeah. She's suspicious as fuck. She's just like, maybe I'm losing my mind. I did have that fucked up dream. Maybe I'm going a little bit.
Okay. So you get up to the house, and there's a woman dressed in white linens with a nice white blouse on, white pants, and a black belt. The only different thing on her that's not white. somebody opens the car door for you. She goes, hello, welcome. I was told that you had a jar of our product.
Yes, I do. I had some follow-up questions, and I also wanted to find out a little bit more about your process and perhaps speak to you about, business opportunities.
Well, our product only goes out to members of the new rejuvenation company. We have a membership. What product did you get?
A membership, you say?
Yes. A membership.
Well, I mean, I am a member of the most exclusive clubs in this town.
It's hard to... You've obscured your face a bit. I'm at a loss for who you are.
She very slowly removes her sunglasses and, like, takes, like, hooks a finger into the wrap around her mouth.
Miss Belafonte?
Yes. Please, I need more information about this exclusive club and why I haven't already been invited.
Can I see the product that you used?
She pulls it out and gives it.
Oh, I see the problem. You use this by itself, correct? And it caused some issues.
Yes. Yes, I looked fabulous yesterday, but today I'm a little bit worse for wear. And I just wanted to know, is this normal for your product?
You're supposed to use a few different products together, and that should have been told to you. Whoever gave you this should have told you. They shouldn't have given this to you. Would you like to come in, and I can hopefully help you out before you have to do any shoots?
Yes, I would love that, please. Your mercy is just so touching.
I think she kind of like starts to tear up, realizing she's been had.
I hope that the rest of your members are kinder than the one who's done this to me. You should see how maimed I am under here, darling. It's terrible.
We'll get you fixed up, of course. Come in. And you walk in. And we flash forward to a few hours later at the studio. All of you have shown up. And Evie walks in looking as wonderful as she did the day before. And you all get up to the stage. Robbie, you're looking through what Jacques Couture has done to your script. And you are undoing what he's done. He seems absolutely sure that Imane and Evie should be related somehow and keeps rewriting your stuff to show that.
Relationships don't have to be romantic or familial to be important.
And is just like muttering in the corner to themselves.
So you're all within earshot of each other. And Evie, you walk in, you got this complete treatment and your hair is perfect. And your face no longer has the crease on it, and you feel good again. What do you do when you get to the stage?
I think for a moment, she just kind of basks in the light, knowing that she looks fantastic. She has a flash to that young ingenue that still lives somewhere inside of her heart. As she kind of like turns her smile over to Imani and holds out a hand to like bring her up on stage and is kindlier than usual, in addition to being more beautiful.
Right then, Belle shows up, and Johnny, her photographer, is next to her and watches this display, the light streaming down onto the stage as Imani's helped up onto the stage by the beautiful, effervescent Evie. Johnny leans over to you, Belle, and goes, we need to find out more about that young one.
I like your instincts, kid. Yeah, yeah. She's got to have a background.
Someone just shows up, and what's up with Evie? Look at her.
Oh, yeah. I noticed that yesterday. She just, something's off. It's too quick for a surgery. So, I don't know. Something hanky's going on here.
All right. Well, I'm going to go and see if I can find out where this Imane lives and do some digging.
Yeah, because I mean, I'll tell you, that story about just getting off the bus and getting a job. Come on. Nobody does that in this town. That's what they put in the papers, but that's not how it happens. Do you really think that Lana Turner was discovered at a soda shop?
No, I don't.
Exactly.
All right. Well, have fun swimming with the guppies. I'll see you in a bit.
All right.
Don't eat too much. Don't want to fill up your stomach too quick. And he leaves.
What the hell's that supposed to mean?
What are you doing, Lenore?
I think given the conversation that was had the, you know, evening previous, Lenore is kind of in a weird headspace and sees Belle and like, it's almost imperceptible But she lets slip, like, the quickest eye roll.
Can you give me a roll, Michelle? Spot hidden. How about that?
Spot hidden, okay. 36 under my 45.
Yeah, you catch it. You feel this presence of anger.
Okay. I just look over at Lenore, and I smile, and I look like a shark.
And Lenore sees that and goes back into sort of presenter mode and puts on a smile, but there's kind of like a sharpness to it.
Robbie, you're noticing all of this tension as you're trying to write. And then off in the corner is the man who rarely speaks. And he's got a huge grin on his face as he's watching everyone kind of moving around. And he looks at you and he winks. And that's where we're going to stop this episode.
Ah. Evil.
Slow clap. Slow clap.
Oh, all right. So thank you all so much. I'm really looking forward to seeing where all of this leads. Nowhere good. Let's find out where all these wonderful people are. This time, let's start with Lev.
Hi, I'm Lev. I have been Robbie Sedillos today. You can usually find me over at Mayday Roleplay doing all kinds of chaos and sadness in a good way, in the good story way. I'm also on Twitter at LegoM2, the letter 2, RS. And sometimes I hang out over at Crossroads with Ol' Carrie. Well, not old. Carrie's younger than me. Why am I saying old Carrie?
Hello, I'm Candace. I have been Ebony Belafonte. You can find me at that Candace girl on Twitter, at Candace Marie on Blue Sky. And I too can be found over with Carrie on Crossroads Games. By the time this goes live, I might have something that I've GM'd. You can also find me on 12-Sided Stories Podcasts, Bloom and Blight Podcast, and tons of other stuff. Just check your social medias.
Hello, hello. I'm Sam Starr, and I have been Imani DeVoe. You can find me all over the interwebs at Lust for Life X. You can catch me at Saturday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern on Transplanar RPG's Twitch channel for their second campaign, The Chaos Protocol. And you can also find me on Bookhound Bounty Hunters here on 12-Sided Stories as well. So, and some other stuff, more than likely. You find me on my socials. That's where I let people know things that I do when, like, you know, I'm, like, on them and whatnot.
Hey, y'all. I have been and will continue to be Mac Beauvais. You can find me everywhere as at Strange Like That. All of the places, or, you know, try Ouija board summoning. It's okay. It's fun. No demons. It's totally cool.
Yet. Yeah.
not until I show up after you summon me with the Ouija board.
It works. I did it yesterday and Mac showed up right there in my living room. It was a good time.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a good time. That was pretty baller day.
Yeah. Tea cakes.
I'm Michelle, and you can find me on the socials at Michulhu. That's M-I-C-H-U-L-H-U. And you can find my music and Wes's amazing sound effects if you subscribe to the Plate Mail Games catalog through BattleBards.
And I am Wes Otis. You can find me at Plate Mail Games on most socials now. And you can find the show at 12-Sided Stories, the number 12, and then Side Stories on most socials now. Or on our website, 12sidedstories.com, all spelled out. If you want to help out the show, you can become a Patreon or a Ko-fi member. Or you can give us a shout out on your favorite social media platform. Or you can give us a review. Any of those things help out a lot. Or join us on Discord and just say hi and let us know what's up with your gaming life as well. We will talk to you all very soon next time on Otherworld Hollywood.
Bye, everybody.